Well, space travel changing in front of our eyes. William Shatner just this morning, oldest person in space, possibly the most famous. And then there's this bloke, Chris Hadfield. He was a jet fighter pilot in the late 70s, but wanted to go to space, so he completed his first mission in 95, eventually became the commander of the International Space Station, became a household name by chronicling life on space and in space on social media, and then released the album. He's also an author. Debut novel called The Apollo Murders is out at the moment. Chris Hadfield's with us from Canada. Morning to you.
Good morning to you, Mike.
So let me work you through this. Have you always been an overachiever, fighter pilot, space, music, novelist? I mean, where does it stop?
Well, I don't see any reason to stop. I mean, you get one big go-around in this life, and I'm just intensely curious about things, and I love learning new stuff, and so I keep challenging myself with things that excite me, and so I'm not trying to impress anybody. I'm just doing things that I think are fun and challenging, and maybe I'll learn to do something new. And in this stage of life, is like I feel like I'm 8 years old all the time, no matter what I'm doing.
It's a great way to be. The Canadian space program. If you didn't have a space program, would you have joined a space program somewhere? Was that always the dream?
I really considered that as a young teenager. When I had set my goals in life to try and fly in space, Canada at the time sure didn't have astronauts. We didn't have a space agency. We didn't have rocket ships. And I thought, well, maybe I should, go live with my distant relatives that are in the United States and change my citizenship. But I thought that's such a ridiculous long shot. And I would far rather be Canadian than American anyway. And so I'm just not going to do that. And if, the chips need to fall where they may to some degree. And luckily, Canada was prescient enough to form a space agency and work cooperatively with other countries and have Canadian astronauts. But it did cross my mind that I might have to do that. I sure am glad I didn't have to, though.
All modesty aside, do you need to be exceptional to be an astronaut?
Well, to be a professional astronaut, where you're actually flying the ship, that by definition, you are an exception, right? It's such it's the rarest profession ever. I mean, it's such a tiny number of people have done this I guess you could call that exceptional. And if you're going to be off the planet for 6 months, then you have to be extremely self-sufficient medically, technically, psychologically. So that takes a peculiar set of skills and natures. So yeah, whether that's the type of exceptional that everyone would want, I don't know. But yeah, the astronaut select in the current European and American astronaut selections, 20 or 30,000 people are applying for a handful of positions. So they can definitely choose pretty exceptional people.
Is it all it's cracked up to be?
Oh, it's better than that. It is. I mean, I dreamed about it when I was a kid. I had really high hopes that this was going to be, okay. And it was better than I had imagined when I was a child. And you're weightless, which is like suddenly someone just gave you a superpower and the whole world is pouring past. You could see the entire planet, every place in existence. And you're doing something really hard and you're doing it really well. So it's just, it's a magnificent personal experience. And I right up to the last 10 minutes after having been there for half a year, I was still just exulting in the thrill of it and the joy of it and the difference of it and playing with weightlessness right up until the first steps back towards Earth.
Which is the thing that fascinates me most of all. If that's your job and that's your dream, it's not like it's 9 to 5 Monday to Friday. In other words, once you come back from the space station or your orbit or whatever the case may be, you're back at the office. It's not like you get to keep doing it. It's not an ongoing experience. How do you handle that?
It's unusual in that it is not any sort of linear improved progression, like where you keep getting better. And, by the time you hit 60, finally you've hit some sort of penultimate. You command a spaceship. It's one of the most complex and very heavy level of financial and life or death responsibility. And then you come back and you show up at Houston and you go back to your desk. And now it's someone else's turn. And so you now are like, maybe you're in charge of payload safety development for the next 3 years. And so, the it's not just climbing up, but climbing down the ladder is a learned skill. And it's something I learned in my 21 years of service as an astronaut. But it's something I think most people externally might not recognize, is the meritocracy and the flat command structure of being a professional astronaut, and the necessity to do your part so that when it's other people's turn to take the risk, that they can really do it as well as possible.
Now, obviously, Bezos, Branson, Chris, and the various billionaires, does that cheapen the experience, do you think, or limit the danger, or take away the true majesty of what you understand space to be?
No. It's sort of as if you imagine if you were sitting down 100 years ago talking to Orville and Wilbur Wright and saying to them, so KLM has just formed an airline. Does that somehow cheapen your experience at Kitty Hawk in 1903? And I think they would have the same answer I do. And that is, why do you think I was willing to take all these risks and to try and push the technology? It's why I was a test pilot as well. It's so that we can now bring something that used to be either impossible or incredibly complex and dangerous and therefore very expensive, try and wrestle that somehow closer into the mainstream of what is part of human commerce. And it's just radically moved that way over the last decade, where, you know, SpaceX has gone from this crazy group of people to now being the main launcher of things to space in the world, because they're so much cheaper and safer, to now this past summer, where, as you say, three different companies have developed technology so far that unqualified people can now have an astronaut experience. And I think that's great. We still haven't sorted it out by any means. And, you know, how do we integrate it into society, and what's the right level, and, you know, what's the right business model? We're still real early days on that. Everyone's jumping to noisy public conclusions. But what's really impressed me is the underpinning technology that has opened up a whole new capability that is now available to humanity. And that's significant. And it happened this summer.
With a purpose to what, though? Because you need to counterbalance. I mean, it's one thing to get up there and go, I've been to space. But what about the stuff that happens on the space station, the experimentation, the advancement of humanity, all of that sort of thing? You've still got to carry on with that aspect of it, don't you?
Well, there's an entire solar system and galaxy and universe out there. So it's not like we suddenly ran out of space or something, or challenges. You know, we've just taken the absolute easiest bit. It's sort of like saying, oh, you can go down to the harbor and rent a little, you know, two-seat sailboat and sail around. Well, there's no point in having ships anymore because, you know, now people can day sail in the harbor.
Yeah.
You know, no, they're unrelated. And the skill set to begin traveling further, to begin settling the moon, to you know, the stuff that is still unattainable of, you know, sending people beyond. And it sounds crazy, but, you know, we didn't get to Antarctica, to the South Pole, until 110 years ago. And now thousands of people live in Antarctica. We have a whole different set of laws and cultures down there. It's been a huge, interesting difference of human culture development, law development, and scientific understanding. And that's sort of the phase we're on now with where our cheapened or decreased cost spaceflight is giving us. So it's, you know, people always get all excited about what's going on right now as if there's never been a precedent. Just a quick check of history shows just how this fits into everything else and where it is liable to lead.
The difference, I suppose, with your example is that Earth is finite. Space, as far as I know, isn't. It goes for it. What is it we need to know? Do we need to go back to the moon? Is it important to go to Mars? Is a rover more important to land somewhere we'll never go as humans? Or is it better to just focus on the space station and do interesting stuff there?
Well, Voltaire described Canada as a few acres of snow and rock. And because that's how it looked to France in the, you know, 15, 1600s. And I think that's exactly the question you're asking. You know, we've got our own problems here. We've got our own successes here. Why would we ever want to go anywhere else? Because people are extremely comfortable with their normal. You know, just look at how COVID has shifted people out of their normal, and just how hard it is to change and to accept the change and to recognize that if the bounds are shifted beyond your expectation, it's hugely disrupting to your life. And so Voltaire felt that way about an entire new continent just because it was inconvenient to what he had been expecting to do with his life. And And so I think there's a lot of that. But discovery of how the rest of the universe works, we don't know what 94% of the universe is even made of. We just call it dark matter and dark energy. We don't know what causes gravity. We haven't figured out what the subatomic particles are and how it is we can generate power differently. There has to be the curiosity and inspirational engine that drives people to solve those problems so that we can get a much more sustainable set of circumstances here for the population and all life here on Earth. And, you know, they're all parts of the same piece or pieces of the same puzzle. So yeah, I think the complacency of thinking is always going to be the enemy of adventuresome people and new invention. But the human history is such that we've always managed to continue to explore, and that has led to the quality of life that so many people enjoy around the Earth right now.
Chris, it's been fascinating to talk with you. I appreciate your time very much, and good luck with it all. Chris Hadfield, the singing astronaut, among other things and other talents.